Do you like the Star Wars? Welcome to the Rancor Pit, because this is the place to be if you like the Star Wars. This is Cole, Jedi Cole Houston, of course, and with me, as always, is none other than the great...
Eddie Medina, and I have a confession to make. I also like the Star Wars.
Do you like the Star Wars?
I do.
It's high time you came clean with that after...
I know.
Good couple of years now.
Well, you know, people already knew of my fond love and affection for the Get Along Gang, so I figured now
that's true.
I got hooked when I started reading the Star comics way back in the day, which inevitably, well, yeah, and then that led me to buying Ewok comics, which led me to love the Star Wars.
Okay, so the Get Along Gang sort of. Did you ever watch the Animal Olympics.
I think so. The Hanna-Barbera stuff.
Yeah, I think there was like something called Animal Olympics, which was kind of like a long gang for sports.
Gotcha.
I guess. So anyway, welcome to the
Get Along Podcast.
Yeah, Get Along Podcast. So get along here. This is, of course, the Rancor Pit, and, of course, one of the things we like, Eddie and I both, about the Star Wars is the action figures, the various toys and action figures and collectibles that have become such a big part of everything Star Wars from about 1978 forward, technically from the early bird set in 77 forward.
Yeah. So, I guess you could count paper dolls if you got the early bird set and cut out the pictures.
That's another weird confession.
I didn't say it's my confession. I said if someone were to do that.
Say it, but...
just, you know, hypothetically speaking, if someone did that.
If someone were to do that, that's the sort of thing they'd do. So, we're here to talk about today. This is Collect All 10, which sounds a little awkward.
But is it 10 or 12?
Well, that's why it sounds a little awkward.
Oh, okay.
We're going to collect all 10 because we, Eddie and I are going to talk about in the vintage Star Wars collection from 77 through about 85.
Yeah.
Our top five favorite Kenner, rather.
Yeah.
Our top five favorite Kenner action figures of the original. The original 100 and some odd, or 90 some odd.
Yeah.
I think they were just over 100, or just shy of 100, something like that, all told, that came out in various waves. And I remember getting the little booklets that would come with some of the ships and things like that. And you would have, you know, you went from collect all 12 to collect all 21 to collect all however many each one would admonish you to buy. That's where they got the idea of Pokemon.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you had to catch them all.
That you had to. What was always so exciting about those were whether it was the catalogs, like you said, that came in the vehicles or the card backs, was seeing those, the yellow backdrop with all the figures lined up. Nothing was cooler, you know, than to use that. I used so many of those card backs as my checklist.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That was the ideal purpose for them, is to kind of tick off whichever ones you'd managed to acquire over time, because that was part of the thing, was the chase, I think. You know, we talked a little bit about the show, a little bit before the show, and Eddie had referred to it as the chase.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and, what that meant.
Uh-huh. Well, the hunt, actually.
The hunt, that's right. The other thing.
Yeah.
It's a chase.
You could go with chase.
It's just the hunt.
Weird.
Yeah.
It would be weird to refer to yourself as a bounty chaser.
That's true. Bounty chaser is when they throw a bunch of paper towels down a hill and you see how many you can catch. So it's an unusual sport, but not much seen anymore. But back in the 70s, we were pretty bored.
It's big in the Netherlands still.
Oh, that's good. That's good to see. Well, I guess with the snow, it softens the impact when you trip and fall. Going back, I actually have in my hands right now the very first Kenner booklet.
Yeah.
Back when all it showed was the Escape from Death Star game, the Dip Dots painting set. Not to confuse with Dippin' Dots, the ice cream of the future, mind you.
Yeah.
The jigsaw puzzles, and then the promise of more exciting Star Wars toys at your dealers soon.
Yeah.
And on the back, it had photographic images of the 12 characters that would comprise the action figure line. And that was sort of your little teaser, as it were. That was your Chewy world of toys.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the very first one had... The one that actually showed the figures was just thrilling, because you know, here you saw... And interesting enough, the very first booklet that showed the figures showed the vinyl Cape Jawa.
Yeah.
So they weren't prepared to go all in with the cloth costume just yet.
Yeah, yeah. And that was so exciting to see those images, because just right at the beginning, I remember it was really tricky to come across all the figures at once. Like, I do remember making a couple of stops with my parents as a kid. I think the first stop would have been at Sears, and you saw maybe a couple. I think I remember seeing right at first Chewbacca, maybe Luke, and the droids. And then it wasn't until we went over to Best Products there at Redbird that I actually got to see a few more. But again, it wasn't until you started to make several stops, whether it was at Toy World there in the mall?
That was like overpriced. Because it became Circus World.
Circus World, not Toy World. Circus World.
But it was
World.
Called something else before Circus World, and for the life of me, I can never remember what it was then.
Yeah.
At Redbird, anyway, we never had a Toys by Roy.
Yeah. Oh, that's
Toys
it.
By Roy
Toys
was the
by
other
Roy.
Big. Yeah, that was the other big mall store.
Yeah, that's right. So, like, you really had to go around, to, whether it's to one of the 5 and 10s or, you know...
Yeah, Kate, she had to go to Mott's or Ben Mott's Franklin.
Or Amy Moses.
Amy Moses, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, and of course, they were always more expensive there, but at least you got to see what they look like.
Exactly. I
hoping that one day they'll show up at Kmart, since they were a little cheaper at Kmart.
I remember breaking down and buying IG-88, I think, at a Mott's.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You're probably familiar with the very Mott's that was at Hampton in Illinois.
Oh, yeah, by the library?
Yes, exactly. Exactly, right? The one right by the
that's
library.
Where Nick and I, that's
and
where
they,
Nick...
they would keep the Star Wars figures like 60 feet up.
Yes.
The, you know, they had like the old lady had to go get a ladder.
I remember when we had Vic on the show, he was telling that very story at that very Mott's.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, it was so weird. That was such a weird set up, because the other 5 and 10s weren't like that. They were just like your standard size shelving units. And
yeah, some 5 and 10 places had like a little locking glass case.
That's
for
right!
Small things, but most
yeah.
of them trusted you not to rip them off of their Star Wars figures. Mods.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
That's right. I do remember seeing some of the lockable cases as if, you know, like nowadays they would have stuff like, you know, the... cell phone chargers, I guess.
Exactly, or video games and stuff.
That's funny.
Yes,
see, I guess what we're the aim for tonight's show is just to kind of you and I to give our top five of the vintage figures.
Exactly. Yeah, the vintage action figure, our top five, the five figures out of the dozens and dozens of figures that comprised Kenner's vintage lines.
And not just 3 3/4, they could be 12-inch or just whatever really struck our fancy. So, because it was tricky, because when we started in on this, we were just going to do our top five figures, and we started realizing, man, there's a lot out there.
I think this is a good time to point out that this is the precursor to more. We're going to actually be giving you a series of three shows.
Uh-huh.
This is, of course, Collect All 10. We're going to do 10 more coming up, let me see here, probably in 2 weeks, yes.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes.
So, yeah, in a couple of weeks we'll do our top five each of the modern figures, which is going to get a lot trickier because there's a whole lot more of those guys.
Yeah.
And finally, we're going to kind of close out the series with our top five, or our top to be determined toys from other lines. Just toys, not collectibles.
Mm-hmm.
From you know, various other sources.
Yeah, yeah.
So with that in mind, and again, we're sticking to the vintage collection. We're sticking strictly to the action figures because we're really going to have to challenge ourselves in that third one when we talk about all kinds of toys, because that's going to include every vehicle, accessory, playset.
By that episode, we'll probably decide to add a fourth episode.
Yes, exactly. We may be at this a while. So
don't hold us to just three episodes.
That's right. That's an ideal, not a given.
Exactly. It's like Transformers, the comic, when originally it was just a four-issue miniseries, and then they just kept going to issue 80.
That's right. So with that in mind, Eddie, why don't you lead us in with one of your top five? And these are in no particular order, at least in my case. I'm not going to try to figure out which one was the number one.
It's already difficult enough trying to come up with five.
This
so
isn't
going to
be like, you know,
VH1,
the, you know. Oh, the VH1, the best Star Wars figures. Here he is at number four. So.
Okay, no particular order. My first one would be Bespin Luke. And only because...
Oddly enough, I have one in my line of sight right now, so I'm actually looking at my Bespin Luke.
Oh, okay. And it I don't know why I choose Bespin Luke out of all of the Lukes that are there, at least the basic Lukes from the three movies, because it was actually kind of a toss-up between Bespin Luke and Jedi Luke, because he had the cool fabric robe that came with it. But he also had, like, that weird gimp step to him, you know, where he had, like...
Yeah, every now and again, you would get that gammy leg or whatever.
It was like him and, like, the Bespin guard, you know.
Yeah, the second Bespin guard was, like, striking a pose or something.
Exactly. He had, like, some swagger.
I don't know why he was really... Because he had, like, one leg way longer than the other. He needed
exactly.
You know, one of those mismatched Frankenstein shoes.
Uh-huh, exactly. Whereas that the first Luke was kind of cool because it had the telescoping lightsaber coming out of his arm. But I kind of just decided on Bespin Luke. It just, out of all the Lukes, I think it growing up as a kid, it was always my favorite. And I can't explain why. It was just, maybe it's just the design of the jacket and pants and the boots, or just the fact that he had, you know, just... Just a different look to him. And I think I had the Luke. I don't think I had the Bespin Luke with the darker hair. I think I had it with the lighter hair.
Yeah, mine's in fact the yellow hair.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what color that is. Kind of an ochre.
Yeah. That's a good way to. Yeah.
The ochre hair Luke.
Which is probably more realistic to Mark.
Perhaps so.
But
it was more in keeping with the yellow hair of the original.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, yeah, it's not to be confused with the okra hair, Luke.
Okra hair. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Which is a rare variant. That was going back when they were doing like the hamburger head alien or whatever, when they were trying to do the tandem X-wing and all that other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The disco Leia.
It was an edible figure.
Yeah,
It was
early into the days when people were trying to get into okra, and it wasn't popular enough, so they canceled it.
Well, there was an okra surplus at the time, and they were trying to figure out a way to get rid of all the extra okra.
Yeah, the problem was that at retail, to have a perishable action figure was very difficult to market.
Oh, yeah. Where are we going with this?
I don't know, but we kind of derailed one of your favorites. But I think what's cool about that figure is the costume design itself, because you've got the pockets going on, you got all kinds of little bitty elements about it, and then you have the gun belt, and you've got the lightsaber permanently hanging there at his head.
That always intrigued me too. I always thought that was cool that they had like the lightsaber hilt just there dangling from the belt. I thought that was a good little addition to it, you know. Because so many of those old Kenner figures had such that you had some that were just weird kind of basic sculpts, but then you had some that came along that really had some really. They put some thought into it, and I think the Bespin Luke was one of them.
Yeah, and in fact, what was cool about the Bespin Luke and some of those others is they were starting to allow themselves more and more access to these design elements. From what I have read about the original Star Wars line, there was a deliberate mandate at, you know, the upper levels at Kenner rather, to minimize the sculpts down to the bare minimums. To make the tooling as simple and cheap as possible.
Yeah.
And then over the years, I guess they were, and what's odd with that is it almost seems like after the first wave that might have been abandoned.
Yeah.
Because by this, the later, like the second wave, you've got characters like Hammerhead.
Oh, exactly.
You would have thought would have been a huge no-no. Or Greedo. Yeah. I mean, out of necessity, Greedo is a very complex head sculpt.
Well, and not just that. Oh, yeah, Greedo definitely. But the X-Wing Luke, if you think
about it. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, that was a very detailed figure. I mean, in my opinion, of the original New Hope figures, I think the X-Wing Luke and the Stormtrooper are probably some of the most detailed out of the series. But yeah, Bespin Luke would be my first choice, so... That's that for that one.
All right. No, I like that because that's an unusual choice to lead with. I don't think I would have seen that one coming.
Yeah.
I figured there's going to be some later in the discussion where she'd be like, okay, yeah, that definitely, you know, I can get behind that. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, I think I'm going to go because we've got Bespin. I'm going to jump in with Bespin Leia.
Oh, wow. Okay, good. Good deal.
And, you know, the thing about it is Leia... From as far as costume elements,
yeah,
this was a neat costume, and it was neat to see the way they went about translating it, because it brought things. It made me like take a second look at the actual costume.
Yeah,
there were things I didn't notice on the screen, because you know it had the traditional vinyl cape, and yeah, they were still doing the vinyl cape thing into Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Lando had a very, you know, that sort of putty colored cape. You had, and they were still producing Ben and Vader and Tusken Raider, original Leia, etc. And the neat thing with Leia was that in the package she has this kind of pink color, this sort of dull pink. But once you got her out and you realize, you turn around and there's this imprinted design.
Yes.
With all this filigree and little, it was like somebody got a hold of the Spirograph. And went nuts. And then you go back and you watch Empire and you realize, wow, all that's there.
Exactly.
It's this fine lace stitching in the cape. And it's like, wow. And just the little elements like the belt, the little midriff belt, and the accent lines in gold.
Yeah.
And there's just so much value added on this particular figure.
Yeah.
And of course, she has her little space slippers on. Her little Bespin house shoes.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't really expecting it to be like, you know, she thought they were just going to have like a casual lunch, like maybe some burgers or something. Didn't realize Lando had invited company. And,
Yeah, it was like
it was made even more awkward because the other participants couldn't eat. It's like, I didn't realize it was a helmet party. I got a blast shield helmet back in the Falcon. I'll just run get it.
It's
like, I forgot something back at the Falcon. What? I forgot to stay there.
Yeah, I never really gave much thought. I mean, I always knew about the intricate design on her cape, but it never occurred to me how unusual that would have been, especially for that time. So, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, the fact that they went to the trouble to, because that would have meant a very, you know, I'm sure these things were stamped out of sheets of vinyl.
Yeah.
But that would have meant a very precise stamping.
Yeah,
of
exactly.
Of those capes, because they would have to print that design onto the sheet multiple times and then have it line up.
Exactly.
Precisely where it was. It's like, you know, printing money. You know, you want to make sure everything lines up just right. Otherwise, you know, nobody wants that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I think I would go with Bespin Leia as one of the top five vintage figures because of all that, in much the same way that the Bespin Luke captured your imagination with some of the details.
Yeah.
It was like little things that you didn't think about, and you know, being somebody who opened the figures as soon as I got them,
Yeah.
It was like, it was just this one more thing you got in the package beyond her just her little funky pistol.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's a good choice. It would never have crossed my mind to that you would have thrown her in the mix. So yeah, that's good. I like that. All right, let me see. In no particular order, I'm gonna go with the Stormtrooper because
Interesting.
this is just one that, to this day, I mean, I love the troopers. If there's something I love, if I have to narrow down my collection to just getting certain things, it's just the troopers. And which was obvious on Force Friday because the only thing I purchased on Force Friday was the Black Series First Order Stormtrooper. But even as a kid, I was so intrigued with the Stormtrooper look. You know, I wanted desperately to be able to dress up as a Stormtrooper as a kid because it was such a neat thing, just their armor and everything. And then they
Yes.
see that action figure. And again, it was such a well-sculpted action figure for being in that line where you said that they were going for a minimalistic look. You know, if you think about it, the helmet had so much little detail to it.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, of all of the figures, I think there are a couple that stand out as being the most perfect representations of their characters. And the Stormtrooper is certainly one of them where, because of the relatively simple design, when you think about it, it translated itself beautifully. They didn't have to do a lot to capture every element. And in a way, they capture more of the design of the costume elements with that character than they do with, say, Han or Luke.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
Because
especially
Han's
that.
got those like scrawny, he's got those chicken legs. It looks like he's wearing spandex pants.
That's a that is true,
Because
that
if you look at
figure.
later Han figures, like say the Bespin Han or even the Han Carbonite, there's some substance to his pants.
Oh yeah, there's folds, there's wrinkles, you
And
know,
the funny
it
thing is, there's
gathers here and
substance to Luke's pants.
yeah.
But, you're just waiting for Han to get physical, physical. It just. It's like he's, he's doing ballet in the movie Fame or something.
Exactly. It's so weird because I was out with friends last night. We were talking about Fame. It's so weird
Oh,
that you brought that up. It was
First
actually with
Fame reference
yeah,
of
it
the
was actually
Rancor
with
Pit.
Danae Griffith from Lubicon. We were talking. Somehow we got on the subject of Fame. So it's funny that you
Wow.
bring that up. Yeah, but the Stormtrooper, it's very detailed. I mean, if you just take the figure and take a very close look at it, like you're saying, they really nailed it because it's strange because some of the creatures they completely got wrong, and that's because I know they were going off of just maybe production shots and stuff. Like some of the Cantina creatures, they're not wearing what they're really wearing in the movie.
Exactly.
But with the Stormtrooper, if you look at the design of the legs, you know, the right leg kneecap, the left leg kneecap area,
Exactly, the subtle, the asymmetry.
and the
Because you wouldn't see asymmetry in a costume design like that until Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, exactly. And then
Which,
the abdominal.
Playmates was the kings of asymmetry with those figures.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's like a start on that. Weird figures that they came out with. But like the stomach even, that little abdominal area, you know, they
Yeah.
got all that little, I mean, and just
Yeah, the weird little collection of slide rules or whatever that. Or,
Oh, what was the candy bar we were talking about
Oh,
in the
Marathon! Yeah, okay, it was a
marathon
plastic
bar? You're
Marathon bar.
like, he's got little marathon bars tucked into his belt.
Okay, yeah,
Just sticking out the top
because
there.
crouping, you don't want to get one of those Snickers moments where you start getting crabby.
Oh my gosh, for the listeners out there, we were at Red Pegasus in an Oak Cliff for Batman Day, and you know, Cole and I were out there. I was out there as one of the guest artists, and Cole was coming in attendance, and out of nowhere, Cole busted out the marathon bar, and
Well,
I
because
thought,
Thomas Branch was eating this,
oh, that's
this
right. Yeah,
Cadbury
that's
like Curly Whirly, I think it's called,
really whirly.
And I was complaining that that was exactly like the marathon bar, only smaller. And Eddie is on it. I mean, he's like, or he or Thomas, somebody found imagery.
Oh, I did. I got run off. As soon as you said marathon bar, I thought, oh my gosh, I haven't thought about that in years.
I couldn't believe I finally found someone who remembered the marathon. That was my favorite candy bar. Because they tricked you into thinking you were getting more for your money.
Exactly. And that was always a favorite because, often going down to the 7-Eleven and going to the spinner rack to get the comics for that month.
Yeah,
marathon bar was always, if you had just a little bit of money left over, you always wanted to get a marathon bar because, like you said, it took you hours
to eat the thing.
Exactly.
I mean, it took like 12 seconds to eat a Three Musketeers. It's the least substantial of the candy bars, but you could be the better part of the day on that marathon, especially if you stayed indoors and didn't let it melt.
Exactly. So we got way off topic, but that's okay.
Never happens on this show.
Well, it all goes back to 1977, so it's okay.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we're kind of waxing nostalgic for toys and candy.
Yeah, but just very quickly to wrap up on the Stormtrooper helmet alone, if you take the figure and just look very closely, all the little detail, like the... just the indentions here and there, and it's just so perfectly sculpted.
The little frog ear pieces at the cheeks, and
yeah, it's not like 100% accurate to the Stormtrooper. Like the proportions aren't there, but the design is there.
Yeah,
and I think that's what was important, especially with this early first wave.
Well, there's so many elements, though. Like you say, there's the little. I don't know, like the little indentions along the forearms.
Yeah, exactly.
The little ladder work there, whatever that's meant to be. And all of these just subtle things that could have been glossed over.
Yeah.
And it almost makes it look like whichever guy got Han Solo's legs wasn't obviously not the same guy that got the Stormtrooper.
I will give him this, though. They did find a good way to save on painting. Because it's already mostly white.
Yeah, that's true. That was probably a joy from the... That's probably why you got such a developed sculpt.
Yeah.
Because they were going to save money at the factory when it came time to paint.
Uh-huh.
One color, a handful of swipes.
Yeah.
And you're on to the next one. That's the one of the figures that, you know, they were able to just shoot down the line, like the Jawa, you know.
Yeah.
Smudge a little black paint, couple of dots of yellow, you're on your way. That line had to be not unlike the, Lucy Candy line at that point.
Exactly. Now that I think about it, the aforementioned Bespin Luke, there wasn't much
more. Yeah, there were just a few little swipes of black and a little bit of yellow or whatever, depending on what day. And
I think if you really think about it, most of the figures are that way.
Yeah. Once you start to really analyze it.
It wasn't until
Jedi that they got ambitious.
Exactly.
You have more color ops, you have more accessory pieces.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, on to your number two.
Shoot. Yeah, I've kind of, actually most of my vintage collection, very close to where I'm sitting here in the studio.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like looking over all of them and trying to think, you know, where does one go from here. I'm going to go with an unusual one in the vintage line, 2-1-B.
Oh, nice.
2-1-B was really neat because I remember the first time I saw pictures of it, I was thrilled and impressed that they went with casting the body in translucent plastic and painting over it. So you had that sort of, they didn't fill in the guts like they would on the modern one. But they did give you a 2-1-B that was just, you know, chock. What was so cool about it is, you know, you had that clear body.
Yeah.
And again, those little details like pockmarking the upper body.
Yeah.
To make it look like, you know, kind of roughshod metal, and the paint itself, which was sort of a metallic blue.
Yeah.
And then you had the separate element of the little, lounge crooner microphone mouthpiece. that had a little tendril that would plug into the side.
Yeah, exactly.
And they took this. That was one I was incredibly anxious to own. I could not wait to get my hands on. I remember calling places and trying to explain to the lady at Best one time
that it has a
clear body. And I think that part, I narrowed it down to where I was like 90% certain that what she had was what I wanted.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get her to visualize that inside that bubble between the blue chest and the blue crotch.
Yeah.
Hashtag 21B crotch.
Yeah.
Was a translucent or clear plastic. I lack the sophistication to try to stump her with translucent, but... And then he came with a stick, so, you know, like so many characters.
Yeah, he did. He had like that little American Idol microphone, like he was ready to do some karaoke or something.
Exactly. He had his little pointed stick.
Or you could say it was like an oversized sonic screwdriver for you Doctor Who fans.
Oh, it could have been. He too would be like got a hold of one of those. No wonder you're so proficient as a doctor of robot
yeah,
doctor.
Exactly.
But the neat thing with that one also was to skip ahead to the modern line, because this is not going to be one of my modern favorites, is that the modern 21B came with this weird little gun thing.
Yeah.
That had like offset, had two barrels, but one was shorter than the other.
Uh-huh.
And that one always struck me as such a weird thing. Why not just give him his stick?
Yeah.
And I kid you not, looking up stuff for the cutscenes from Star Wars movies, there's a scene where a 21B, minus legs, apparently, is down on the ground examining a dead Tauntaun in the Rebel base.
Yeah.
And in his claw is that very gun. Looking.
Oh! No kidding.
And I was like, I never realized they actually derive that from an actual prop. So that's pretty cool. But 21B is certainly one of my choices because it was one of those where they took a unique step.
Yeah.
In how they approach the character.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a good one. I like that. Yeah, I like that. It's they did odd things. Things you weren't expecting from time to time, and that's what was cool about it. In a way, 21B was a lot like FX7, where you didn't really see the FX7 figure coming.
Yeah, that's true. I never would have imagined they were doing FX7.
And that was unusual because it had the multiple arms that would pop, you know, out and back, and you know the telescoping head, and
never go back in quite as good as they were.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. The 21B is a good choice. Well, you got some good ones. I'm going with just some popular favorites. And
well, that's what this is all about. Is just kind of which one struck you personally. There are no wrong answers here.
Yeah.
Just ones that aren't mine.
Yeah. My next one's going to probably be an obvious one for a lot of people, but this honestly was one figure I could not wait to get my hands on, and that would be Boba Fett.
Ah.
And still to this day, one of my favorites. And just looking at the design of the figure, it just exudes cool. Now, granted, growing up and then you get more familiar with the design and everything and you get the more modern figures, you start to look back and realize what was the deal with on the right side of his helmet, I guess it was supposed to be the little antenna that normally goes up. They just kind of molded it to his forehead.
Yes, indeed.
Is that the idea there?
To me, that always looked like, with the 12-inch Boba Fett, you could, the camel view and finder, as it's known, you could position it forward, like down where it would be just sort of almost sticking out within his field of vision.
Yeah.
And I think that's literally what they, as a design element, that to have that little stem would just be unworkable.
Yeah, exactly.
Given the level of technology that they had for the sculpts back then. And,
sure.
So,
I guess you gotta give them props for doing that, because if it was me, I would have just left it, ignored it completely, and just did the helmet.
Yeah, I think that the idea was it was supposed to, and I think that the original design element was it was meant to be where it would, you know, slide down.
Almost flush with his forehead?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it would be kind of just sticking out like, almost like a audio-video rangefinder or something that would come up within the field of vision.
Exactly.
Almost like the little drop-down targeting computer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Same sort of idea just built into the helmet. Uh-huh. And I think they were borrowing that element and working that in where they could at least have the impression mm-hmm. of, you know, that kind of... that element that they were otherwise going to have to leave out.
Exactly. But with the Boba Fett figure, like you were saying earlier, there, and with some of these other figures, they got really detailed. I mean, with the helmet, you know, it indents at the cheeks. With his chest plates, they went through the trouble of... They could have just done the basic shapes of the, mm-hmm. the three plates and then the little thing in the middle. But they actually, on the left breastplate, they actually did the little notches, you know, carved in.
Yeah.
And on his shoulders, underneath his yellow shoulder pads, they, you know, detailed in the little, you know...
Yeah, it's got like that little Captain America armor kind of...
Yeah, like the little body armor area. And then just the lines, the pockets, the little Boy Scout tools tucked into his shins, you know, right. Just his flame, how they actually detailed the whole flamethrower on his mm-hmm. left arm. It's just, they got really intricate.
Yeah, I mean, really, apart from just, you know, adding little design elements,
uh-huh.
those were really the only things missing would have been some of the symbols that would appear in modern versions.
And I think one of the pluses that came from, you know, obviously everyone would have thought it would have been cool to have a rocket-firing Boba Fett, but since they did away with that, I think it kind of worked in the figure's favor because... Normally on these Kenner figures, they would have had the backpack of any sort detached from the figure, where with Boba Fett, it was already molded onto his body, that way it could hide the mechanism of the rocket-firing
exactly.
missile. So since they just kind of did away with the little lever and then they just permanently attached the missile, it's cool because you actually have his rocket pack molded in onto his body already. To where it's not going to be removable, so...
Well, they also did, like, the sculpted in the striations on the neck.
Yeah, yeah.
And the just these tiny little elements here and there with the backpack, the straps for the backpack, the...
Mm-hmm.
All the little pockets and, you know, the sorts of things that have become very popular in Image Comics characters. And also the squaring off of the boots, because Boba Fett's boots were supposed to have these little spikes at the end of his feet.
Yeah.
And there's even the indication of that. And actually, my Boba Fett figure was within reach. As we were talking and you were describing some of the elements you like, I was looking at that point where the little antenna, the camel view and finder...
Yeah.
And you actually, there is the stem of it at an angle.
Oh, okay.
Protruding from where it would be attached to the helmet on that side.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, because I don't
have... That's all sculpted in such a way. It would be much shorter, the stem of it, much shorter than normal.
Yeah.
But at least they have that suggestion, like I was saying, where it's meant to be, it's sort of pushed downward mm-hmm. Just above his visor. So... They actually went to the trouble to sculpt in little details that I had honestly never noticed until just this moment.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was always there. And that was one of the neat things about all the bounty hunters, is they had just these fun little sculpted in elements.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Bossk with his little scrub brush sticking out of his leg belt.
Bossk would have been another one that would have been on my top five, but it just I couldn't.
Yeah, it's hard to narrow this series down to just a handful.
But like you were saying, like the bounty hunters, like whether you want to call one or the other, Forlom and Zuckuss, you know, those two are very detailed figures too.
Yeah, and who was known as Forlom, and I knew, I knew that was wrong all those years ago. But the fact that you got so much with that character.
Yeah.
with the coat.
Yep.
And that's a hell of a lot of fabric. Mm-hmm. Plus a plastic overlay belt mm-hmm. strap-on thing there. There's so much you got with that guy.
Yeah.
And all the detail that was thrown into Dengar's armor.
Yeah.
And the way that his little head bandage, headpiece thing is at a jaunty angle. And the fiddly bits on IG-88.
Yeah. If I had any, if I had one complaint about the Dengar figure, actually two, is the first one would have been that I always thought, even as a kid, I always thought his legs seemed a little stumpy for his body.
Yeah.
And two, as an adult, I realized he looks a lot like Lou Costello.
Wow, he does. I've been a naughty bounty hunter, Babbitt.
Yeah, that's it.
But he also had that neat little, like, whole giant backpack thing going on.
Where uh-huh.
He had this whole air conditioning unit attached to his back. And it wasn't until later viewings of Empire Strikes Back that I noticed how much stuff was going on
mm-hmm.
with
mm-hmm.
his backpack. And there's all those, you know, little... Because they got, by Empire, they got all kinds of photographic... resources, some of the references
yeah, yeah.
to work with, and so that was a neat.
And just quickly to correct myself, I'm over here mixing up my Star Wars and my G.I. Joes, because I'm thinking G.I. Joes are the ones that you always had to attach the backpacks to as a kid, but I'm just realizing it's like I'm thinking about it. Star Wars figures, there wasn't any that came with detachable backpacks.
They really didn't.
Okay, and like I said, I'm getting mixed up between
the vintage and mine. Well, that's the thing is that the only real separate backpack that they ever did was they had the mail away, where you had like the little the space slug gas masks, that you could strap onto Han, Leia, and Chewie.
Yeah.
And they made backpacks of it was like Rebels, the Hoth Rebel backpacks.
Oh, gotcha, yeah. Okay. Interesting.
And it was like, it was like this little mail-away accessory pack. It was several guns. It was the backpack that you could cram Yoda into.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And
I guess if you want to get technical, the C-3PO that came apart, and you would bag them all up in that net that Chewie can lug them around in, wasn't...
Yeah, that was the only figure that actually came with such a thing.
Yeah.
Because you did have that going on. Because I think, yeah, because the C-3PO figure came with the little vinyl backpack.
Yeah.
The break apart C-3PO.
Yeah, the break apart.
But yeah, they really didn't hit upon the idea of the backpack being a separate element, and I think that's largely a product of where Hasbro would go with the G.I. Joe line. I think that's what inspired, even when it was still Kenner, with the new figure lines, to take mm-hmm. that approach.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't happening.
Well, and I guess it kind of served two purposes with the G.I. Joes, because that the hole where you could probably put the... No, they had a separate hole for the backpack. They had a separate hole for where the screw was that you could take them apart and replace the rubber band.
Yeah, they had like a tinier hole in the backs of those that would utilize a backpack.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So anyway, Boba Fett would be my third choice. So
Boba Fett's a very good choice. Let's see. Wow.
I know, right? You start thinking about it. It's hard. It gets hard to figure out just the five top.
Well, in the interest of not seeming like, you know, I'm doing this in any particular order, I'll jump into one of the biggies, because this was one of the ones that I never bought on the card Thankfully, never had to because I never saw it on the card. And that, of course, was the a Mana Man from Jabba's Palace.
Yeah.
Which I bought with the Sears exclusive.
Yeah.
And a Mana Man was by far the one of the most single most unique sculpts. By Empire, I'm sorry, by Jedi rather, they really had to step up their game.
Yeah.
And because they were, the characters were becoming more and more complex and more, you know, less of a guy in a mask and a costume and more of a just bizarre puppet creature things.
Uh-huh.
And so the Man-O-Man stood out, I think, is one of the handful of characters that were so unique. I mean, here you had a character that was taller than average as a start.
Yeah.
And then you add to the fact, or add to that, the shape, the long gangly arms that drag the ground, the giant hands.
Yeah.
And then, on top of all of that, you have the staff.
Uh-huh.
Which I remember the staff being such a huge surprise. Because it was, like, skulls and hands and...
Yeah, it was like something out of a Clive Barker movie.
Yeah, it was kind of gruesome. And you're not half expecting that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And, in a Star Wars toy line, so
that was
really, I mean, I remember I bought that through the Sears catalog as, you know, the Sears exclusive, that set where they kind of repurposed
the
Droid Factory.
Yeah,
and I was in college at that point.
Yeah.
And I was at Sam Houston and did not have a vehicle of my own at the time. Had to get somebody to drive me over to the Sears Outlet Center there, the Sears Catalog Center.
Yeah.
And I had placed the order and had to go over and pick that up at the Catalog Center.
Wow.
And so, yes, I had my... And that was just such an amazing thing to get that, to open it up, to have, you know, hold in your hand this really unique figure with a... insanely unique accessory that you didn't even realize was necessarily part of the movie.
Well, it's such a detailed figure. Again, if you were to get the figure, hold it really close and look at it. You know, I don't have one, so I can't do that. But, you know, just looking up reference photos online, it's so detailed. You know, just the, especially the area between his chin and chest.
Yeah.
The wrinkles get so tiny and intricate.
Yeah, it's got like these little gill-looking wrinkles. There's and the paint scheme as well is, because he's, you know, from the front it's mostly the yellow plastic.
Yeah.
And then the back is this green leaf-like texture.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there's just so many little elements about that one that further add to it, because there's so much going on.
Yeah, yeah. It is definitely a unique figure, and it's no wonder that it's...
Yeah, and, you know,
it's so sought after.
Its footprint is as well. It takes up a lot of space.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, because it's just... It's extremely wide. It's wider than most figures. It's because of the hands that, and the long arms, it sticks out. It takes up a lot more... space in almost every direction, and it's pretty tall too. It's just, you know, a little bit taller than most, and very wide. And
yeah.
it's just they did such a neat job of capturing of translating that unique shape. The modern one is kind of is fun too, because they're trying much harder to be accurate to the puppet.
Yeah.
So you know, you can tell side by side a lot of the differences between translating this character into a vintage versus translating it into a modern. But, you know, right down to the weird little feet that point inward at each other.
Yeah.
They're just it's so chock full of unique elements that are unlike anything else.
Yeah.
It really addresses the idea of what would Kenner have done with a lot of the character designs in the prequels, for example.
Yeah.
And the answer is they would have adapted them in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, because he is kind of pigeon-toed, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got these weird little, like, crescent moon-shaped feet. That he would almost, if this character was walking around, it would have to literally step foot over foot like one of those little wind-up toys.
Yeah, I can see that. Oh, gosh.
So that's another thing that just makes it so much fun, because there's nothing quite like it.
Yeah.
You know, I think the closest you'd come is, like, predating that one a bit was the, Size Noodles.
Yeah,
as far as just a completely unique version of a take on a Star Wars figure.
Yeah, that is true. That would be, like, the closest one. So, wow. So you still have, the one you have in your collection is the same one you got from the Sears catalog.
It is indeed.
Wow. Well, good for you that you,
all these years, I've always had the same amount of man.
Well, I mean, and it makes sense, because like you said, you were already in college, so at that point, you're of the mindset of a collector.
Oh, yes. In fact, I mean, from the outset, I was very fortunate to have hung on to nearly everything I have vintage as the pieces I bought as they came out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Same with us, with the exception of the tragic tale of my Yoda that got chucked.
That's right.
Well, anyways... Yeah, man, that's a good one, because again, it's so unique. It's got the really cool accessory with the Clive Barker gory heads.
Yes, it's just it's like,
and again, I go back,
desiccated heads and hands and things, and it's just wow.
It's about that time of the Temple of Doom coming out, so Lucas must have had gore on his mind, you know, when he did all
this. Later versions would replace the staff with a walkie-talkie.
Oh, that's right. Uh-huh. That would be the play school versions of a Man-O-Man, I think.
Exactly.
whatever they're called, Galactic Heroes.
Galactic Heroes Man-O-Man, that's right.
Yeah, well, that's a good one. Man-O-Man is a good one, because I never really knew until I looked at reference photos how detailed he actually is in the sculpt. I always thought of him very leech-like, you know, in appearance.
Yeah.
And then when you look at him very closely, like if you just look at his face, he looks very cobra-like, you know, very snake-like.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Well, cool. Alrighty. So I guess it's a... my turn to go.
Indeed. So we're up like number, what, 3 out of 5? Or
This will be my fourth.
4 out of 5, okay.
4 out of 5. This is going to be Greedo.
Ah, yes. I would expect no less.
Well, and it's not an exciting figure to most, but it was almost legendary in my mind. And like you were saying earlier, it was almost unique in that early line of figures because he was so detailed in the sculpting of his head. You know, it was textured, you know, he had all the little ridges and the little marks around his eyes. And what I always thought was cool also is that they gave you the impression of reflection off of his eyeballs, I guess, because, you know, he had the green eyes and then you had the little white dots.
Yeah.
That would signify reflection. But, you know, even though they really missed the mark on his body, you know, he doesn't have the vest. It just vaguely resembles what he's really wearing in the movie, but not really.
Well, here's an interesting fun fact. If you look at the Nabron Leeds figure from the modern line.
The what?
Nabron Leeds. Which is the gas mask, conehead, four-armed creature from the cantina.
Yeah.
Look at that figure's costume.
Yeah.
I'll give you a chance to take a look at Nabrun Leeds real quick as we record.
Spell.
Nabrun Leids, I believe. This is an interesting thing that I discovered even before the figure came out when I was just looking at pictures of the character one time.
Spell that last part again. L-I what?
I think it's L-E-I-D-S, but let me see if I can
okay.
I can make that determination here.
Yeah, I totally didn't get that. It's giving me like a lake resort thing.
Oh, wow.
On my search. Yeah.
It might narrow to Star Wars now.
Oh, here we go, here we go. I put Star Wars before it, and
that'll get the lake resorts right out of there.
Yeah.
But look at that character's costume.
Okay. Yeah?
As you're imagining the Greedo costume.
Okay. Yeah? I see what you're going with this.
Essentially what Kenner did was give Greedo this character's costume.
Yeah. I never caught that. Look at that.
In fact, sometimes you can find images of the actual production images of the actual character.
Uh-huh.
And you can definitely see that that's what Greedo was given.
That's exactly what it is. I'm looking at it now. Wow.
Yeah, that's a little known fun fact there about the character of Greedo. And
nice. Well, with me, the Greedo was, like I said earlier, was almost like, it became like a legend. It was the figure I couldn't get as a kid. It always seemed like if it was either sold out, or I remember one time even going to Kmart and flipping through the Star Wars figures, and I saw the Greedo card back. I thought, there it is, finally, I'm going to get Greedo. And I'm shuffling through trying to get the figures in front of it off the peg, and I go I finally reach the Greedo figure, and some Nimrod had stolen the figure. It was just the card back and empty bubble.
Oh, man.
So I was like, really? I was like, gosh. I was so irritated.
Wow.
I was so irritated.
That's sad.
That's just one of those figures, like I said, it seemed like it would be an easy one to get, but it always seemed to elude my grasp. And so that was actually one I never had as a kid, and that was one I always wanted as a kid.
Oh, so that makes it even more, you know, adds to the mystique.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. It became legendary to me. And it's so weird because practically growing up from middle school on in the Comic-Con scene as an attendee, and later on as just vending and being an artist, I probably had more than enough opportunities to buy a Greedo figure as an adult. But it was just one of those things that you keep passing up, you keep passing up, you keep passing up. Well, this speaks to how wonderful my wife is. Just, let's see, maybe it couldn't have been more than maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It hasn't been very long. You know, Christmas time comes around. You know, Colleen knows I've always wanted a Greedo, never got it. So we always do this tradition where Christmas Eve, her and I open up our stockings. And then we have something fun like Coco, and we watch like Scrooge or something. So we do stockings, and I'm reaching down in there, and I'm feeling this thing, and I know it's a figure. And I was like, oh, cool, it's an action figure. Pull it out. It's a Greedo. It's practically in gem mint condition.
Wow.
And has a blaster.
Nice.
Yeah, so I finally was able to add a Greedo, a nearly mint Greedo with blaster to my collection, finally after all these years.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's a...
Well, and so you had another reason that that's such a vital, you know, such a compelling and integral part of, you know, is the stories behind some of these things as well.
Exactly, and when we came up with this topic, I knew Greedo was going to be the very first figure that I was, you know, going to choose as one of my top five. Was going to be Greedo, without a doubt. But anyways, so yeah,
absolutely.
That would be my number four was Greedo.
Well, I personally had a tremendous fondness for Greedo as well, because it was just such a cool figure. There was so much detail there. Mm-hmm. You had the little, and the fact that, you know, because he was the only one with a fully closed hand.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You were actually able to, he could do things like slide on a piece of string like a rope.
That's true.
So, you know,
that's true.
I actually used to utilize him as a, like this action intergalactic spy character because he had more potential in that regard.
Uh huh. And it's so funny how he comes with the same blaster as Han because you know that legendary face off of Han and Greedo.
Yeah, with the same blaster. Imagine showing up to the gunfight with the same blaster.
Yeah, exactly. Little known fact, they both showed up to the Galactic Prom in the same dress.
Oh, I know, and the embarrassments continued.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the thing about it was, that was one of the places where Kenner saved a lot of money, was minimalizing the accessories.
Oh, yeah. There, so, like, you have, like, maybe three guns and Leia's and Chewie's.
Yeah. Because, you know, the Cantina creatures, two of them got a Han Solo gun, two of them got a Stormtrooper gun.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's kind of how they save some bucks there.
That's true. And like I said, of course, Chewie had his rifle. Leia had her little pistol. And the Jawa, I guess the Jawa would be the other pistol
the Jawa had the unique gun early on.
Yeah, yeah.
And by Empire, they added a few more guns. But
they started to get a little bit more broad. But you still saw a lot of...
There was a lot of repeat. Yeah, a lot of... The Stormtrooper blaster remained. The Han Solo pistol remained. Because, like, even Luke X-Wing had the Han Solo gun.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think any of the Jedi figures came with a Trooper or a Han blaster. I don't recall any of them, except for... I mean, obviously Han Solo Endor would have, but that would be the obvious one. But any of the other, like, creatures. I think they actually...
There was a unique... pistol from Jabba's palace that was getting bandied about, and that was very true. By then, you're starting to see less of that. I'm going to go kind of unusual. One of the things I loved about the Star Wars line was that you did get the odd character that was kind of unique and went away from the normal mold, as it were.
Yeah,
and that was the power droid.
Ah,
the power droid was such a cool little character because it was another one of those unlikely choices.
Gonk,
the gonk, as we would often call it nowadays. But the power droid was really kind of cool because they were trying to give you something extra with that character by putting in that weird little metal.
Oh.
And there it is.
Is that it? Okay, do it one more time without me talking.
All right, here we are. This is the actual sound of the gonk droid or the power droid legs. Here, we'll see if we can capture this. And that was achieved with a thin piece of metal put in an angle inside the body.
Yeah.
And as the legs... There was like just a little bit of a flange on the interior of the legs.
Yeah.
And it was almost like putting baseball cards in the bicycle spokes.
That really was.
And so you had this little two pieces of metal that, so you know, depending if you moved one leg or both, you could actually alter the pitch. And you know, you had the requisite sticker to represent certain elements. But they painted on some elements.
Yeah.
There was an actual... It is actually a sticker that makes up the white stripe.
Yeah.
Around the interior... the midsection there.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they just did some things to try to make this look as much like the thing as possible. And the funny thing is, it doesn't look like the droid that they use in the picture.
No.
And it was always kind of curious that, you know, but that very blue gonk droid, that power droid in those very blue colors with a little orange highlight is seen walking across the courtyard at the Lars family homestead.
Yeah.
So it is actually based on an on-screen gonk droid. And when you look at even... Star Wars or New Hope, if you will, you look at that, the variety of power droids there alone was rather remarkable. And then by Empire, you get some really neat ones, and with all kinds of little stuff added in.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Gong Droid's kind of an unusual choice because it was an unusual choice to begin with, and I thought that it was just such a fun little addition to that line, and kind of an unexpected addition early into the line.
Mm-hmm.
When they were barely, there wasn't that much to go with. They were only adding 8 more characters, and this was what they chose.
Exactly. And I'm guessing your power droid still has the little rubber antenna attached.
Yes, it does. That's a good point. They had a little separate piece that was made of rubber.
That thing was so tricky to keep up with as a kid.
Oh, yeah. And what's amazing is it's still very soft rubber to this day.
Yeah.
It hasn't hardened up or become brittle.
Yeah. Well, good,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I will have to say the power droid is a...
That's a good one. I like that. That's a good choice. Because in a way, he's almost like the original BB-8.
Yeah, and that's a good point there. It is.
He didn't really get a lot of love back in the day, like BB-8's getting showered with love now. But I mean, he was very unique. He's very cute. You know, it's nothing's cuter than that little box robot with those tiny little legs going back and forth, scurrying about. So yeah.
And I'm very happy to see that there will be Gaunt droids in episode 8.
Really?
Yes.
In 8?
How do we know? In 7, I'm sorry.
Oh, my bad. Okay,
there probably will be an 8 for all we know, but there will be a... yeesh. There will be Gaunt droids in episode 7.
Okay, I thought maybe they released the title of episode 8 and it was going to be like, Gonk's Gone Wild or something.
That would be awesome beyond words.
Wouldn't it? We would all just die happy at that point. Okay, so let me see. My fifth and final entry.
We're fast approaching having to wrap this sucker up. So yeah, what you got for number 5?
Let's see. I got the biker scout as my last choice, and I know it's another trooper, but like I said early on, I'm crazy about the troopers, and the scout in particular of the Star Wars, the Return of the Jedi line was my particular favorite because I've told the story before about how, once I started seeing those first images of Return of the Jedi in Starlog magazine, and I saw the biker scout on the biker speeder bikes, that blew me away. That the design of them, the look of the biker scouts, even to this day, I would love to be a biker scout in the 501st. So obviously, that fascination with the armored figure, translated to collecting the figures, because that was the one I had to have in the Return of the Jedi line. Amongst so many great figures in the Jedi line, I mean, the Gamorrean Guard was another one I had to have, the Leia in disguise and Lando in disguise. But yeah, the biker scout was the one that really, as a kid, I had to get that first, if I could, if that was the first one available to me. I think the first Jedi figure may have been something else, maybe a Gamorrean, maybe. Did Wicket come out early on in the first wave?
He was not. Wicket, the first Ewoks to come out were Lo Grey and Chief Chirpa.
Okay, well maybe
and Wicket would come a little later, yeah.
I remember getting an Ewok very early on.
Yeah, it might have been Chief Chirpa.
Yeah.
Because what set Wicket apart was just how tiny.
Yeah.
There's only one figure in the entire line tinier.
Mm-hmm.
And Wicket was just amazingly tiny for even for an Ewok.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But then help is better than no help at all.
I got reminded of that. Again, this past weekend at Red Pegasus, looking through their stock of reaction figures, and I saw the Gizmo figure for the Gremlins line. First thing I thought of was the Wicket figure, because it's so reminiscent of that. The tiny little action figure on this card back. But yeah, Biker Scout's my fifth and final choice.
That's an excellent choice there. That really is. And, a lot of people are going to wonder why not this character, because we did a whole episode of the Rancor Pit Live on this character, and of course Hammerhead. And I think we gave Hammerhead so much love.
Yeah.
That I'm kind of recusing, even though easily he would be in the top 10.
We all know, in your heart of hearts, Hammerhead is number
Hammerhead's number one, so we really can't allow Hammerhead into the mix. And so it really comes down to, you know, gosh, this has been very tough because there's so many choices. And I think we could have each done, you know, our top 20 and still been lacking.
Exactly.
And, you know, still wanting for more. And I've kind of been casting about through the whole show trying to decide because it is difficult. So I remember, like, the Tusken Raider was one I couldn't wait to get, because I love the fact that they sculpted him where he's holding the staff with both hands. Low Gray was so cool because he was almost more cat-like than teddy bear-like.
Low Gray was cool because of his headpiece to me.
Yeah, he had the cool headpiece, he had the staff, the bag, he had so much stuff. But I think I'm going to go...
Messenger bag.
Bib Fortuna with his cloak and his cane and his staff. And then he had this, like, little rubber, like, chest piece underneath his cloak.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But I'm going to go with Reyes.
Oh, nice.
I was fascinated with Reyes.
Yes.
When that figure came out. It was just... It's such a cool character. A very difficult sculpt.
Yeah.
Because of those three the eye stalks and how they translated those scrawny little eye stalks, because later versions of them, like the most recent modern version, is insane how perfectly they captured them in the sculpt. But, you know, they did what they could with it and did a damn good job. And that goat-like face and the two sets of ears and just all the little fine details, because this is that point where they're starting to really dig in with, like, all the little wrinkles in the back of his head and the chubby cheeks and the crustacean-looking hands.
Yeah.
With the flat fingertips. And
yeah, he had, like, those big Hellboy hands.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He had both hands of doom. And then just, like, all the little, you know, the ribbing in his top.
Uh-huh.
And the... Just all these little elements. Plus, they did it where his stance is a little bit of, like, 1 foot forward. His left foot is sculpted deliberately a little bit forward of his right. And so it's just got so many little elements that make it so cool. But it's that level of detail that just really blows me away. Because there's so many little elements that they threw in that they didn't necessarily have to.
Yeah.
That you might not have missed, per se.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there are little things like, you know, they did what they could with the Klaatu and Nikto to add certain design elements. But with Reyes, it's like whoever got that one just went to town.
Yeah, no doubt.
It must have been the same person who sculpted a Man-O-Man, because there's so many subtle details.
Well, like you're saying, like his... I guess, jumpsuit that he's wearing. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I'm looking at reference photos of the vintage figure, and yeah, it's a nice, nice sculpt job on that whole thing, top to bottom. His ears, like you're saying, his two sets of ears, the bottom set, when you're looking at it, how detailed they are, it's amazing. It really is. How they got the likeness of him so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's another... There were so many complex characters in Jabba's Palace.
Uh-huh.
And certain ones they just really went all in on, and that was certainly... And especially when you compare the fact that this is the same line that gave us, like, the Bespin Luke.
Yeah.
Which is almost Bespin Luke and... or not Bespin Luke, the Jedi Luke.
Yeah.
And the Jabba's Palace Luke. And the Han Carbonite Han.
Yeah.
Which almost seems simplistic by comparison.
Yeah.
Insofar as the sculpts.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They almost are hearkening back to the original. And
what's
so funny is they never, probably to save cash, never really altered R2-D2. You got different elements added, like the periscope or the lightsaber coughing up element. But they never attempted over all those years to improve on the body.
Oh no.
Or the head sculpt.
The only thing that differed in the R2-D2s was the inside of the barrel, his barrel body, where they had to size the inside in order for the third leg to fit in for the Droid Factory R2-D2.
Well, the thing was with the Droid Factory R2, the thing that annoyed me about that is, had they sculpted the Droid Factory R2 leg, had they sculpted the peg of that a little shorter, it would have worked.
Oh, I know, because I tried it on, because I had the Droid Factory R2, and I would try the third leg on my regular R2, and it would never fit.
Yeah,
it was
because of
too long.
That giant screw inside the body.
Exactly.
Had they made it a little shorter, because the one in the Droid Factory, because it was in pieces, didn't require that.
Exactly,
That giant bolt inside.
Uh-huh.
You could have used it universally, and that was the one thing that annoyed me no end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, just real quick, since we're talking about vintage figures, do you have, like, a funny story to tell that is vintage figure related?
Any
of them? Okay, because
there are a couple. I think I've told before about the chasing down of the Leonardo.
Yeah, you did chase that. You did tell that story.
The only other one that just springs to mind when you were talking about Wicket. Was a conversation that my friend Steve and I overheard of this this couple, and this woman was saying, "It's Wicket, Wicket." He's like, "No, Wicket. No, Wicket. No, Wicked." And we just wanted to go and say, no, no, really, she's right. I hate to burst your bubble here, but she's dead on right.
That's funny.
But it was just this ongoing, no, it's Wicked. It's like, no, her English is impeccable. It's just in this case, it's Wicked.
He was desperately trying to make the Ewoks sound scarier than
it. Oh, could be. It was he was advancing Warwick Davis to Leprechaun.
Yes.
Wicked.
That's what he was doing. Well, my funny story, I feel really stupid telling it, but it must be told. And keep in mind, I was a kid. And I think my excuse for this is because we bought the Rebel Hoth Trooper at a garage sale, I believe, or I know we bought it out of package, so that means we either bought it at a garage sale, or we found it at a thrift store, because they would often show up at thrift stores, like, surprisingly fast, even back in the day. Or it could have been one of the purchases I made from another kid in the class, because I would buy loose figures from kids, ones I was missing. So I had the Hoth Rebel Trooper, and for years and years and years and years, I thought he was Hoth Luke Skywalker.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't until later on when I started going back.
They were very similar in design.
They were, but then they weren't.
Yeah.
And so I got older, and like price guides and stuff started coming out, and things, where you could research what you missed. I realized, wait a second, that's Hoth Luke.
Once you've got some visual guides, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you have to understand, we didn't have the benefit of what, back then, of what you and I have today. In fact, during the recording of the show, you're looking at all these reference photos.
Yeah.
And there was a time when that was never an option.
Uh-huh.
You just had to know or find a magazine where they bothered to go into such things, or you just kind of had to luck into some of this stuff, as it were.
Well, and Vic and I had the catalogs that came with the vehicles like you did, so I know Vic knew the difference. I knew Vic probably knew that that was the Hoth Rebel Trooper, but in my stupid mind, I'm like, oh, it's Luke Skywalker. So, yeah, that's my story, is for years I thought I had the Hoth Luke, and in reality, it was the Rebel Trooper.
What a sad tale.
It is.
A sad tale indeed. Well, with that, I think we've covered our... For a moment there, I was considering allowing us the kind of the latitude to go ahead and go in for a collect all 12, but really 10 turned out to be the ideal number for the time we had at our disposal. So we are going to go ahead and wrap things up here. And
I got to do a quick plug before. Since this is going to be going up before the episode, I was graciously asked to be a guest on friend of the show, Jeff McGee's Star Wars podcast, Bantha Banter, this past week. And so we recorded a really fun episode this past week. And so if you want to hear me on Bantha Banter, tune in on, I think he said, this coming Wednesday.
Oh, very
and
nice.
And it'll be at marvindogmedia.com. That's marvindogmedia.com, and he should have it up there on Wednesday. So just a quick plug for Jeff and the Bantha Banter show. So,
absolutely. Well, thank you very much. I will also give a little plug coming up here. I believe it is Saturday the 4th. Is that right?
I don't know. I'm not sure what you're... It's probably something I'm at, and I don't even know what you're talking about.
I'm trying to make sure I'm getting the date right, that this coming Saturday is the 4th. But this coming Saturday in Dallas, Texas, at the Lost Toys...
At the 3rd.
The 3rd, I'm sorry. Yeah, Saturday the 3rd of October, the Lost Toys will be having their official grand opening. And they will be celebrating this with having their second ever swap meet in store. So there'll be a number of toy dealers, in addition to their amazing collection and assortment of toys available, there will be a small room that's set aside with a number of toy dealers, including myself.
Nice.
I'll be bringing a bunch of really cool toys out to offer. And I will also be producing a special game show.
What?
Yes, indeed. I will be producing a game show for the show. So be sure and come out and check that out at the Lost Toys in Dallas, Texas. And you can, if you want to get in touch with us, write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com and look for us a week from next Sunday then on the Rancor Pit Live with our special guest Dustin Woodward, and we will be back in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense.